when we gather like this each week, we tend to look at a passage of the Bible because the message of love and welcome from the God it describes is wonderful. And it's all centered on the person of Jesus, who changed the course of history and claimed to be God incarnate, God come to earth, and backed it up with his words and his actions and his character. And today, for a short time, I want to tell you a story that at heart is about the surprising welcome that Jesus extends to people, to all people. Okay? Now, this story is from early in John's Gospel, an eyewitness account of Jesus' life. And this is actually from before Jesus was famous. Okay? Today, everybody has heard of Jesus, obviously. Whatever they think of him, everybody's heard of Jesus. But this story is before any of that kicks off, really. Okay? So here we go. Here's a story. On the third day, a wedding took place at Cana in Galilee. Jesus' mother was there, and Jesus and his disciples had also been invited to the wedding. When the wine was gone, Jesus' mother said to him, "They have no more wine." So here's the scene. A small village called Cana in the first century Middle East. There's a wedding. Weddings were a big deal, as they always are. Loads of people are invited, people that are close to the bride and groom and people that they barely know. Hundreds of people are there. And Jesus has been invited, and his disciples are there. That's his immediate followers. And his mum is also there. Okay, so that we're not talking here. This is not a little weird religious gathering. This is normal working people getting together for a wedding. There's families, there's celebrations, there's lots of booze. If you have a view of Jesus that he's sort of serious all the time and uptight and he wouldn't hang out with people and he doesn't like fun, well, that's not Jesus as he is in the Bible. Great so far. But there's a problem. The wine runs out. Now, in that culture, a wedding was planned and prepared over months, and grooms usually have a very small number of jobs at weddings, I find. At my wedding, the job was turn up in a suit and have rings. That was all that was left to me. That's often stereotyping. That's often not what happens. Anyway, the groom in this story would have been expected to provide the wine. He's supposed to make sure that there's loads of wine for everybody. So if the wine runs out, that is deeply embarrassing. Really embarrassing. It's a bit like if you ever go to a party and there's a free bar, it's not really free, is it? The host or somebody has paid for it. But if you went to a party with a free bar and you were looking forward to it and the bar ran out of drinks by 6:30, that would be really embarrassing. People would be moaning. The host would be tearing his hair out. Terrible. So this is a bad situation at this wedding. A bad situation. But it's not life or death. It's not. It's not like there's a sick child or someone with leprosy. Nobody's starving. The worst thing that can happen at this wedding is that the groom won't be able to live it down and people might not have as much fun. That's worst case scenario at this wedding, okay? But Jesus' mum tells him, I reckon she elbowed him. His mum tells him, like she expects him to do something. They have no wine. Nudge, nudge, hint, hint. Get on with something. Do something. Story continues. Woman, why do you involve me? Jesus replied. My hour has not yet come. I don't know about you, but I don't call my mum woman. I'm presuming it was normal at the time. And Jesus is basically saying, why are you asking me? It's not like there's an off license round the corner, okay? What do you want me to do? And he also says something, it's quite cryptic. My hour has not yet come. In other words, I'm here for something. I've got a particular purpose, but it's not this. But his mum, she's actually called Mary, she can get away with ignoring what he says because she's his mum, okay? If you're the mum, you can say whatever. His mother said to the servants, "Do whatever he tells you." This is Mary's way of saying to Jesus, "I know who you are. I know." And she knows him in two ways. On one hand, she carried him in her own body. She gave birth to him. She saw him grow up. She knows beyond any doubt he's someone special. He's someone different to the ordinary person. He can do something in this setting with this problem. But she also knows who he is in the sense that she knows he's going to care about this problem, that he cares about the lives of ordinary people. Yes, Jesus is this figure who he's going to go on and do amazing things, but she also knows he's going to want to fix this wedding problem. He's going to care about that. He's not too intense or mechanical to be unmoved by this problem. Celebration and welcome matter to him. The story continues. Nearby stood 6 stone jars, the kind used by the Jews for ceremonial washing, each holding from 20 to 30 gallons. Jesus said to the servants, "Fill the jars with water." So they filled them to the brim. Very conveniently, there are some big water jars nearby. And these things would have been huge, like they're taller than me, these jars. And they were for ceremonial washing. Now, this is important, okay? In Jewish culture, there are loads of rituals to remind everybody that God is up here and we're down here. God's perfect, we're imperfect. And ceremonial washing was a way to be cleaned, to admit you'd got stuff wrong, to look to repair things with God. And so the jars basically symbolized the need to be released from shame and guilt. And Jesus uses those jars to do something cool. Then he told them, "Now draw some out and take it to the master of the banquet." They did so, and the master of the banquet tasted the water that had been turned into wine. He did not realize where it had come from, though the servants who had drawn the water knew. Then he called the bridegroom aside and said, "Everyone brings out the choice wine first, and then the cheaper wine after the guests have had too much to drink, but you've saved the best till now." So the story is, of course, that Jesus has somehow turned the water into wine on a big scale. We're not like one little thimble, like all these massive, massive jars. Very hard to believe, isn't it? Did this really happen? Can we believe this? Well, consider that we know beyond any historical doubt that thousands of people in the first century definitely believed that Jesus performed miracles. And more than that, we know for a fact his enemies believed that he performed miracles. His enemies believed that he performed miracles. This is one of a number of things that Jesus did that was special. But while most of the miracles associated with Jesus are around healing the sick and providing for the needy, his first recorded miracle, which this is, the first one that we know of in his life, is very different because it's unnecessary. It's unnecessary. Nobody's dying or diseased or destitute. There's a booze shortage, yes. The first recorded miracle of the man that half the planet worship as God is to produce some Cabernet Sauvignon. Or it may have been a nice Merlot, you know, we don't know. Why does Jesus allow his first miracle, his calling card, to be this? Well, the MC at the wedding gives us a clue. He's very surprised. Normally at a wedding, you started with the absolute best wine, and then when everybody was absolutely trolleyed, you'd wheel in the cheaper wine when everybody had drunk too much to notice or care that it was not as good. But the MC says to the groom, "You've saved the best wine till now." Later in the day, when it seemed like the party was about to die down, suddenly the best wine is on offer. Embarrassment avoided. At just the right moment, the wine that brings celebration is brought in, and then the party really gets going. The author of John's Gospel, who unsurprisingly was called John, gives us a little end note. He says this: "What Jesus did here in Cana of Galilee was the first of the signs through which he revealed his glory, and his disciples believed in him." This miracle was more than a fun preview of more important things to come. It was an announcement, a sign, something that powerfully announced what Jesus was about. John says it revealed Jesus' glory, his specialness, in other words. There was something about turning water into wine at a wedding that said something important about Jesus. This was no accident. And here's 3 quick thoughts why: the water, the wine, and the wedding. Firstly, the water. As we said, the water was used for ceremonial washing. The fact that the jars were even there, every village had jars like this, tells us that it was baked into the culture, into everyday life, that something needed to be done to make people in a good place with God, to respond to the human condition, to the mess and the brokenness that exists to this day. And Jesus uses the exact thing that symbolizes shame, jars of water to bring about celebration. Obviously, the groom would have been delighted because he's been saved from shame and everything in front of all his friends, and Jesus bails him out. But the water was appointed to something bigger. Then you have the wine. Now, I don't know if you noticed, sometimes people think of Jesus as quite a dull figure, like a moral teacher. You know, you see him in films and he's kind of weird, isn't he? Like he's a robot and he stares off into the distance and he only says very serious things. But look at this. Jesus, as we're seeing in the Bible, cares about normal people. He cares about celebration. He doesn't turn the water into Diet Coke or a dairy-free mocha. He turns it into wine, which was a symbol of joy. And sometimes, you know, sometimes Christians miss this. The person we worship as God is undeniably pro-joy. He's pro-events where people gather to enjoy each other's company and have a good time. Have you ever thought that about God? Well, it's true. But again, the wine was appointed to something bigger, the wedding. Now, John the author calls this story the first of the signs through which he, Jesus, revealed his glory. Now, John was one of Jesus' 12 closest friends and followers, and he thought that Jesus demonstrated who he was through what were called signs. And throughout John's gospel, there are 7 signs, things that Jesus does that announce himself to skeptical first century people who see what he does and go, whoa, this is different. You're not like everybody else. You're something different. And Jesus' first sign, the announcement of himself to the world, showed that not only could he do impressive, miraculous things, but that he was about bringing celebration to the world. And he announces this, significantly, at a wedding, a natural home for celebration, an event where people are joined in love and commitment. And so what's happening in this story? You've got water, wine, at a wedding. Something that symbolizes shame becomes something that symbolizes joy, at an event that celebrates the loving commitment of two people. The whole story is about the welcome that Jesus puts on the table for everybody. The hour that Jesus told his mum he came for was a few years after this moment when he was crucified. After his death, Jesus miraculously rose again. In other words, he turned shame and guilt into joy. At just the right time, Jesus entered human history and did exactly what was needed to bring us joy. And that's why whatever ups and downs this life brings, and of course we've all got many of them, maybe you're on a down or an up right now, for all of that, if you're a follower of Jesus, you know behind all the circumstances, underneath all that, there is a joy about what he's done and what it means. And he invites everybody into that. And the promise is, and it's unbelievable, one day we'll join him in a great celebration, just like the wedding in Cana, but a lot bigger. And things will be made right, and we will celebrate forever, but beginning with a different kind of wedding, the union of Jesus, God, and his people. And it'll be incredible. And so Jesus' first miracle is to set everyone dancing and laughing, and it's all appointed to something that one day will be fully realized, the thing that at heart I think we all actually want, for our own pains and regrets and wrongdoing to be turned somehow into joy and celebration. And so I want to tell you today, you're invited to the ultimate wedding. You're invited to an ongoing relationship with your Creator, the one who turned water into wine, shame into joy. He wants to welcome you into relationship with him, whether for the first time or for you to return to him after you've been away from him for a while. The place at the wedding is open to you right now.